So welcome. We're going to get started, if that's okay, because it looks like we've got a small group here. So you've flown all this way, and I think we can be done earlier than maybe you anticipated. So welcome. This is the public hearing on the proposed regulatory update for the California Environmental Quality Act guidelines pertaining to tribal cultural resources, which were added as a new resource in AB 52 and signed into law in 2014. My name is Heather Baugh. I am the Assistant General Counsel for the California Natural Resources Agency. Myself and Deputy Secretary Tom Gibson are lead, as well as Emma Coe, who's at actually the end of our table. She's a special assistant to our undersecretary. I'm also here with Holly Robertson. She is land use counsel at the Office of Planning and Research. So this information is in our notice. You can contact me through email or by the phone, and I've got cards in the back as well. So hopefully you've received my contact information in at least 7 different ways. Okay. So I'm just going to briefly explain why this process is happening today and why it's a bit different than what you've been doing. So this is technically a process that's updating the regulations to CEQA. Those regulations are required to go through what's called the Administrative Procedures Act. We call those regulations the CEQA guidelines in regular parlance for those that don't know, but they are regulatory and they have the binding effect of law. So I'm required to hold this hearing and take your public comment today to update those guidelines. We began the public comment period for this regulatory update in February, and the public comment period closes today. However, I want to just identify for tribal members in the room, we actually sent out requests and notices for consultation in December to give you a bit of a head start. And if you would like a consultation and have not already scheduled one, that window remains open and you're welcome to do that if you weren't able to do that by today's date. You can again reach out to me, Emma Coe, or Tom Gibson. What will happen? The agency, myself, and folks that are working on this process will review all public comments that are received, and we have a couple of different options. We can change the proposed language, or we can leave it and adopt it. So CEQA is unique in that it starts at the Office of Planning and Research. That's why Holly is here. Office of Planning and Research develops a draft for us to consider at the Natural Resources Agency and put through this formal rulemaking process. Once that draft is circulated through the public in this process, we'll analyze what the public has to say about it. If we think that it's sufficient, we'll adopt it. If not, we would consider potentially another 15-day round of changes. So you will get a blast through the listserv if you've signed up for that, as well as notice on our website if that 15-day change is going to occur. And you can also call or email me if you would like to know about that. Once we've landed on language that the Secretary of Resources is comfortable with and the public has fully vetted through this legal process, we will submit that to the Office of Administrative Law for their review. That is required in code as well. At that point, we will have to do some justification of the rule, so there'll be a final statement of reasons for why the rule has been adopted the way that it has. There'll be identification of changes from the draft that was sent by the Office of Planning and Research. There'll be a final proposed text for you to look at, as well as the authority and the justification for that text, and then a request that it go immediately to the Secretary of State. This actually becomes the binding regulation that it will be once the Secretary of State certifies that it's been received. So one last note, really important for this particular rulemaking process. This is an update to Appendix G of the CEQA guidelines, and it's not listed in a code number. It's actually called Appendix G. So if you're looking in the California Code of Regulations for these changes, you will actually look for Appendix G. So I wanted to share the language with you and the folks on the webcast so you can see what was proposed by the Office of Planning and Research and what was sent to the Natural Resources Agency. briefly, AB 52 had a very specific directive for the Office of Planning and Research in the California Natural Resources Agency. It said to update Appendix G and separate out the consideration of paleontological resources from tribal cultural resources and update the relevant sample questions. It also said to add consideration of tribal cultural resources with relevant sample questions. So those are the two things that the legislature told the Secretary for Resources to do, though, as many of you may know, AB 52 is a very complex and large set of changes and amendments to law. So what did the Office of Planning and Research recommend that the California Natural Resources Agency adopt? This is the first part of two parts. This slide shows what is informational items at the beginning of Checklist G. So for those who may not know or who may be watching this by web, Checklist G allows planners, consultants, lead agencies, and applicants to consider the potential for impact as a result of their proposed project. It has multiple resource sections, and it has multiple sets of instructions to give them guidance on how to evaluate what level of environmental review is necessary. The section here that's been recommended is going to be, or is being considered for, a section number 10 at the beginning of the checklist to give a signaling effect about consultation. And you can take a moment to read that. There's also proposed language at the back, and it's also on our website, so you can grab that down. The second part, and I'm sorry it's so small here, is an amendment to section 5 of Appendix G, which is currently titled Cultural Resources. Office of Planning and Research did recommend adding a subsection E to this. That subsection E discusses how tribal cultural resources might be considered. I do want to point out as well, subsection D, there was some cleanup done there. So while not directly relevant to the task directive from AB 52, it's helpful when we're doing these things to make sure we got it right the first time. So that's some cleanup on D. So that is the language that we're here to take comment on today. This is an awkward and uncomfortable hearing because I have to sit here and listen, but I don't get to interact with you. So once all comments have been received and I close the hearing, if you do want to come up and talk with me or Emiko or Holly after the presentations, that is fine. But today's purpose is simply to hear from you. It's to allow us to hear what you think, to take notes, and to get any feedback that you might want to offer publicly that you either didn't offer in written comment or that you did but want to share orally. So with that, I'm going to open the floor to public comment unless my colleagues would like to say anything.
Thank you, Heather, for that overview. Again, I'm Holly Roberson with the Governor's Office of Planning and Research, and we'd like to thank the Natural Resources Agency, as well as the public and the California Native American tribes and other state agencies that have worked with us to develop this so far. It's been a robust process, and we look forward to continued robust process. I also would just point out that Appendix G is a sample checklist. So although it does go into the regulations, lead agencies retain their authority to adopt their own checklist should they choose to do so, although we understand that most lead agencies do use the checklist provided.
Great. So with that, I'm simply going to open it up to public comment. And if nobody comments within the next 5 minutes, I'll close the hearing and we can either have a conversation afterwards or you can submit written comments till 5 o'clock today if that's a preference that you have.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Lapina, and I'm here on behalf of Dry Creek Rancheria.
Just 1 second. Is that microphone working? We're going to turn you on so I can hear you. I'm having trouble. Sorry. And our folks on the line.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Lapina. I'm here on behalf of Dry Creek Rancheria. I just want to thank you for all of your efforts. I think that the proposal is consistent with the changes that tribal governments would like to see. It's a movement in the right direction. And we want to thank you for all of your effort and give our support to the proposal as it's currently drafted. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Abra Özdal. I'm a planning specialist for the Pechanga tribe. I come to you with a very unique perspective of working on the CECO projects, not only from a tribal perspective, but also from a perspective of a planner, environmental consultant, and a project manager. I have a degree in urban and regional planning and have worked over 14 years with the public agency and the private sector. Prior to Pechanga, I work as a planner at the County of Riverside and as a project manager, environmental consultant in the private sector, and process over hundreds of CEQA projects. I now assist Pechanga by interfacing with local agencies concerning land use and planning opportunities and restrictions that oftentimes drive preservation and mitigation possibilities for tribal cultural resources and sacred places. I would like to speak to you about how the Appendix G is used by planners working for lead agencies. First, although the offered Appendix G suggests questions are not required and only suggested questions, most agencies utilize the checklist questions just as they are written. It is very rare to find an NGC that alters them from their own jurisdiction, so it is utmost important that they are accurate and user-friendly. As OPR stated in their Statement of Reasons report, many agency staff look at the CEQA guidelines as a comprehensive source of information regarding CEQA's requirements. When initial studies are prepared for seasoned planners, evaluation of environmental impact section of the initial study usually gets skipped over. But the language currently proposed by the Natural Resources inserts the tribal consultation element into this section. Further issue is that the statement about the consultation element has no call to action or requirement that the planner or the agency to make any type of finding or complete any type of action at any specific point of time while processing the projects. Planners process many projects under time constraints and has little resource and the ability to get up to speed on every nuance of the law. This means that they look for exactly what needs to have an action or specific deliverables to complete and rest skips gets over. I mean, that's the reality of it. The language as it's proposed will be nicely worded language with good intentions, but it will be simply be ignored most of the time. It will end up having little force or effect in terms of achieving a notice to planners that tribal consultation is required under AB 52. This is contrary to what AB 52 intended because consultation is a required element to be completed prior to a project receiving its certification. Through the years of experience in working with Appendix G, I suggest that the consultation element needs to have a call to action so that the action of initiating consultation as the time required by AB 52 will be part of the checklist of items to be completed during the initial study process, which is prior to decisions about the type of environmental document that will be prepared and prior to certification of that document. This ensures information provided by the tribe will be timely, efficient, assist the lead agencies with their goals of determining whether or not there's a TCR, considering impacts to a TCR, and the promoting streamlined development. In addition, the consultation element needs to be present and have call to action because it is required information that planner needs to check the appropriate checkbox on the TCR section. Once I worked on a project that was litigated, an applicant sued the lead agency saying that the document was not processed correctly in a timely manner. I was deposed about how the document was determined and prepared. So applying this to a TCR determination, I would have called to testify as to how I made the determination that there was a TCR, and without the consultation element proven and documented in the initial study, this will be a false statement determination. By having the consultation element present and have a call to action will establish Natural Resources Agency's goal of avoiding lead agency's procedural error in CEQA, and then by inadvertently neglecting consultation, and which may help prevent consult litigation over project impacts and delay in construction of identified in page 9 of the initial statement of the reasons. Lead agencies, staff planners, project managers, planner directors, and the managers are not qualified on their own to make determination of whether a TCR is a resource or not. and will not make that determination without consultation with the culturally affiliated tribe. The way that Section 5E1 is written, Platter is not going to consider whether the object has a cultural value or understand what that value is. This is extremely troublesome because the distinguishing factor that determines a TCR and it separates it from other cultural resources that the tribal value. These values were intended by AB 52 to be at the forefront of any environmental analysis. Instead, the way it's written, planners will be resources being listed or eligible for listing on the California Register or local register. Tribal information must be considered, as does all information presented to a lead agency during the CEQA process. The lead agency must consider the tribal value of a resource before and or concurrent with the determination of the eligibility. The way it's currently written will confuse the planners and may not put more emphasis on the actual listing than whether it's the actual cultural value or not. This section is just too wordy and needs to be separated for clarity. Instead, the TCR questions should reflect the elements of definition, namely the tribal value, along with the qualifying criteria for listing and eligibility, not simply asking questions about the qualifying criteria. Again, this will also help the state's goals of preventing costly litigation costs over the project impacts. Since the TCR is substantially different than the cultural resources, it should be a separate category of resources and should have a separate checkbox in the environmental factors potentially affected section. Without having a separate checkbox under this section, there is a danger that a TCR analysis will be done the same as the other resources. I'm not an archaeologist. I'm not a biologist. As a planner, I rely on the information provided and the technical reports in order to check the required boxes and make the determination under CEQA. For a TCR, one major element is the tribal information. If that TCR is lumped in with the other cultural and historical resources, there's a danger that the planners will simply look at the archaeological and historical reports to make that determination, and which is clearly not what the AB 52 intended. Again, to achieve the goal of reducing the cost of environmental review to the lead agencies and a project applicant and allow projects to move forward with more certainty and less potential delays, and to help lead agencies to avoid procedural error in CEQA, the TCR should be a separate category of resource in its own separate checkbox in the environmental factors potentially affected section. Thank you.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, welcome.
Okay. So you all know me, I think. Most everybody does. My name's Laura Miranda, and I'm representing the Pechanga tribe here today, offering comments on the Appendix G. Thank you so much for all of the work that has been done thus far to bring this draft into fruition. I think it's improved, we're moving towards something that is more reflective of AB 52. We're here to offer some comments because we think there's still some changes that should be made in order to appropriately reflect the intent and the language in the bill. Pechanga spent much time, as many of you know, advocating for the passage of AB 52 and working with Assemblyman Gatto as one of his technical advisors on the law. This has been an effort over the last 15 years on behalf of tribes to get tribal consultation and tribal resources into the CEQA. Although tribes have been fighting for their resources for hundreds of years for the protection of them since Western expansion, the state legislature has really paid attention to sacred places over the last 15 to 20 years. And it's taken that long for us through a bunch of graduated steps of getting changes in human remains law, getting changes in the planning law, to now finally have an insertion of tribes into the environmental law for specific projects that impact our places. So we really have an interest in seeing that the rollout of this is done done well, that and we offer our comments not only from the perspective of our work with AB 52, but we really offer these comments to make the implementation of the law easier. We're not doing this to give an advantage to tribal interests or to make the law more more friendly to tribes. That's not what this is about. This is really about, okay, the practicalities of how it is used on the ground every day out in the field by lead agencies, by consultants, by folks that are out there struggling for the protection of the places, and by folks that are responsible for implementation of the CEQA. So we really offer our comments in that vein. So there's four main points. We have submitted a couple of written submissions to OPR before this process, and we will be submitting written comments to Natural Resources, but there are four main points that I wanted to highlight here today in my verbal comments. One, and Abreu, who's a planner with Pechanga, touched on some of those. But the first one is that tribal cultural resources as a category should not be a subcategory of cultural resources. It should be a separate category on its own, separate and apart from the rest of cultural resources and historic resources. The definition to the definition of tribal cultural resources necessarily includes tribal values at the forefront. It's the main component of the definition, and I'll talk about how we think in these proposed questions for Appendix G that has become lost. The values, the tribal value piece. Number three, the tribal consultation element should be a part of Appendix G checklist, and we commend folks for putting that in there. And that's because it's a core component in determining whether there is a tribal cultural resource. But it should be included as an action item, as something for a planner to check or do. And Abreu touched on that, and I'll talk about it a little bit more. And number four, the Appendix G checklist must capture the intentions and mandates set forth in AB 52. It should be straightforward and user-friendly for planners and consultants. Abreu talked a little bit about that. Most of her comments were about how a planner would go through this checklist and utilize it, and I'm going to touch on a few more elements of that. So just a little bit of background. One of the main intentions of AB 52 was to remedy problems that tribes were having in participating in CEQA. And one of these issues was that there was no good place for their resources to be evaluated. They were being evaluated under archaeological sections and historical resources sections. And many times the value of the resource to the tribe, that component was overlooked. It was being left out. The focus was on the scientific criteria without a lens for the tribal value. And so one of the core pieces of AB 52 was to remedy that, and in doing that, create a new category of resources, which is couched in the tribes bringing forth information and the value of that resource to the tribes. The fear and what we already see happening a lot out there, even since July with the implementation of AB 52, is that if we continue to think of tribal cultural resources as a subcategory of other cultural resources, that there is a tendency to overlay a cultural resources, a historic resources, archaeological resources assessment process onto the identification and evaluation of tribal cultural resources. And this is something that happens a lot, where agencies will look to consultants using what are archaeological methodologies to determine whether there are tribal cultural resources. And this may or may not yield the identification of tribal cultural resources, but it doesn't always. And so there's a point of missing some of them if that type of a process is carried out. There is one of the practical issues with the way the questions are worded now, and Ebru touched on this, is that the E reads to cause a substantial adverse change in the significance of a tribal cultural resource is defined in Public Resources Code Section 21074 as either, and then it has one or two. And the check boxes would correspond with either one or two. And these check boxes are going to be really focusing on whether something is listed or if it's eligible or whether there's been some sort of determination that it is fit within the category by a lead agency. Those are not the proper questions. That really shouldn't be focused on whether there is an eligibility or whether something is on a list. One of the other intentions of AB 52 was to get away from this requirement of listing in terms of that is the only way that a tribal cultural resource is going to meet the level of requirements to for CEQA. That listing was a way, that the way the definition was created was that we have the definition, which is on its own a site, feature, place, cultural landscape, sacred place, or object with cultural value to Native American tribe. That is the definition of a tribal cultural resource. And that is what the planner needs to find out if they have. And that is done through tribal consultation. And then there is what I am just calling, you know, verification of that. And the two, the verification arms are if it's eligible or if it is on a California register or if it is included in a local register. And then the other option to verify is that if a lead agency, using the evidence brought forward, can make that finding that there's a resource. So when the definition was created, it generated from a point where a description of what a tribal cultural resource was written out. And there were a number of concerns about just having that definition out there and how would it be validated, for lack of a better term, in a system that people trust and that people know. And this was these eligibility arms and these register lists and lists arms. But tribes all along never wanted to have to list something in order for it to be treated as a tribal cultural resource. And with the division that's been proposed, it's missing that point of the standalone definition and the inquiry that should be made as to whether you have the resource. And then you can ask the questions about, okay, and it is this resource, but do you also have these other two components that actually make it a resource for CEQA, if you will? So we suggest a rewording of that we'll actually be submitting that would hinge on asking the question about the place, not just how it's validated in terms of listing or the registers. I know it's really hard to explain all that without sort of visuals, so I hope that made sense. And then just another piece is that there's a practical problem of of the way that it's divided out now with the two questions and the check boxes would be over on the side. From a planner's perspective, they're not gonna leave like check boxes blank. So they're gonna need to fill in stuff everywhere. So it's confusing on here because if it's a site that's on a register or eligible, are you then gonna leave number two blank? And I don't think that, first of all, I think that you probably should check it because a lead agency will probably then be able to make that determination. So, but it's confusing because it doesn't quite line up with, in terms of filling this out and having each of these questions means and having an accurate description of what's going on. It's confusing in that regard. And then I don't think, from our experience and from ABER's experience, there's going to be a reluctance to leave like things blank on a checkbox and not fill them in. So there either have to be some blank lines to explain that or something else. So then, sort of moving on to the tribal consultation language. Again. We really appreciate that's been included. And it's such a core component. The legislature had made a number of declarations about the value of these resources to tribes and the tribes not historically having input into these processes. So we would like the tribal consultation language to be in here, but think that the proper home for it is in the initial section of the checklist as a potential number 11. I guess this isn't really have a heading, but it's after the heading environmental checklist form, and then there's currently numbers 1 through 10. And we think that this might be good for it to live at number 11 or somewhere in that section versus the evaluation of the environmental impacts, because as Abra discussed, that may be read once or twice by a planner, but then once they're seasoned, they don't really read that because there's nothing to carry out there. So if it's under the first section with an actual call to action about initiating consultation prior to the type of environmental document being determined, that would completely make sense to us. It would help facilitate a juncture where something is being done, and it ensures that the tribal consultation has been initiated, which is the requirement initiated prior to the type of environmental document being decided, which is what AB 52 intended. I'm sure you all realize that one of the challenges with this is pulling a number of different sections together that overlay each other. There's a consultation component. There is a determination of tribal cultural resources component. There's a mitigation component. There's all these pieces that actually weave together. And we're hoping that the checklist can make that within the realms of, you know, what the parameters and the scope are of the checklist, we're hoping that it can reflect that. So moving that consultation language over there, the way that it's currently worded is prior to release of a negative declaration, mitigated negative deck or environmental impact report. Again, we think that misses that other piece. There's another section of the law that states that one of the consultation components that needs to be engaged in if tribes request it is the type of environmental document to be prepared. So it would be wholly accurate to make that language the point in time when consultation should be initiated, not just prior to release of the document, but really prior to decisions about what type of document should be prepared. And I know I'm going way over time.
No, 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 you're fine. We're not going to impose a time limit. I was hoping I could ask you a follow-up question about
sure.
a few things that you said so I make sure I understand. So you said you think the call to action for consultation would be good as a number 11. If there was a new section, Tribal Cultural Resources, would you rather see that request for action there or as number 11 at the beginning of the form, or has that been given any thought, or do you have feelings on that?
We haven't quite gotten that far.
Okay.
We're just, you know, and we're not, you know, we're just throwing out suggestions of what we think might work given the constraints as it's currently drafted. So maybe if it was an entire separate section, it would make sense there too.
Okay. Just checking to see if you all had a preference on that. And then you mentioned that you've been seeing some implementation issues since July when this law became effective. Is Pechanga going to provide more detail about some of those specific examples of it sort of veering towards a different approach in its comment letter? Or
sure.
Will it do that?
We can talk about that. And it's primarily with regard to trying to apply a process that everybody is used to for assessment of archaeological resources, for example, in a tribal cultural resources analysis. And, you know, so what would the consultants do now? How are the lead agencies going to look to the consultants? Are they still looking to the consultants in the same way to get information that they use as their ultimate determination to decide whether something is a tribal cultural resource? Or are they actually now bringing in the tribes to give them the information to make those determinations? And we see things happening on all degrees of how it's meshing together right now. And we fear that we without a clear separation that these resources are different because they do require a third party. You can't just use a consultant to understand whether you have tribal values, which is the core component of the resource and what separates it out from all the other resources. So that is a huge difference. And want to make sure that the agencies, I think a lot of the consultants, maybe archaeological consultants, appreciate the tribe's role. But it's the agencies that maybe don't quite understand, okay, they were used to getting tribal comments as members of the public comments. And now there's language in AB 52 about tribes having possibly having expertise on their cultural resources. And that was intended to bring the tribal information to a different level than just a member of the public. So it's that whole sort of push-pull between with agencies figuring out where does the tribal information land in terms of incorporating that in. And we don't want to see it get lost in favor of a consultant's information, in favor of the sort of old way of doing analysis of resources. So that's why, and we can talk about that more in our letter and give some examples of that too. So the other piece is the actual expertise language, and we think it should be included in as a basis for the tribal consultation. And so would encourage that it be incorporated into that paragraph about the tribal consultation. And this is important because, as I just said, it sets up the purpose and weight of the tribe's information. And without that, it might still be viewed as something akin to a member of the public or a consultant that doesn't have expertise on tribal values. It also, I think, without that language in here, and and the language as it exists, it says information provided through tribal consultation may inform the lead agency's assessment. I think that language standing on its own without tribal expertise language incorporated somewhere, it adds to the confusion of the role of tribal information in terms of the evidentiary standard that is required under CEQA. And again, one of the reasons that the expertise language was inserted was to ensure that, and this was a problem that AB 52 sought to remedy, is that tribal information wasn't just treated as information from the general public. That there was an acknowledgement that tribes have these ties to the resources, this history with the resources, this intimate knowledge of the resources, and that is to be taken at a different level. And there's been a lot of now trying to figure out, okay, so what would constitute the substantial evidence to meet the definition of tribal cultural resources? And we think without that expertise language, there's going to add confusion as to where the tribe's information fits in there. Does it meet substantial evidence? Does it not? Is it the same as a consultant that doesn't have expertise about tribal values? Is it not? And that language in AB 52 was fought for very hard by the tribes. Like that was a big deal to get expertise language into the bill, and it was just for this purpose so there wouldn't be any confusion about the tribal government role in this process, that it was elevated to some extent above a member of the public or other types of information. So let me see. The other piece that I wanted to mention was in our original comments, we had asked that there be an inclusion of a question.
Ms. Miranda, I'm sorry, when you say original comments, you mean to the Office of Planning and Research?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure I have that for the clarification.
Our comments dated December 18th, 2015.
Okay.
Requested addition of, because the mandate is to add consideration of tribal cultural resources with relevant sample questions. We, under that guise, we asked for an addition of a question about human remains and an addition of a question as to whether there is disturbance or whether the project potentially disturbed any resource or place as defined in Public Resources Code 5097.9. Now, that's a Public Resources Code section that deals with sacred sites on public lands. And recently there's been a number of projects that have been processed via CEQA that have ignored that section of the state law. And CEQA does not replace that section of the state law, but there's been a misunderstanding that if you do CEQA, you don't have to look at that component of the state law. It applies to when you have public lands and there are sacred places and tribal cultural resources on those public lands. There's a mandate that has to be carried out in that section of the law. It is something that should be processed simultaneously with a CEQA project, with a Section 106 project, with any kind of permitting process that is being undertaken in the state. And since there's been that misconception that if you do CEQA, you don't have to follow this section of the law, there have been a number of projects that have now ended up before the Native American Heritage Commission with problems because they didn't identify the resources that were on public lands and take appropriate steps. What does this have to do with AB 52? Well, AB 52 is about tribal cultural resources, which are include sacred places in the state of California, cultural landscapes in the state of California. And these things all fall, are all defined in the same way. There's cross-references from AB 52 to other public resources code sections defining these places. And it would really help and streamline the process if there was a simple question in this checklist. And because these are the same types of resources, we don't see that it's going beyond the scope of what's mandated in AB 52. We think it's very relevant to have a question about that because you're already looking at these types of resources. It's just, are they on public lands? Are they on private lands? You know, and those questions should be asked in the beginning. Plus, tribes are not going to make those distinctions. They're going to be talking about the resources, no matter where they fall on boundaries of land ownership and whatnot. So you're already having those discussions. You're already identifying sacred places, landscapes. This should fit in nicely here, and it's going to prevent a lot of costly a lot of these are state projects, public utilities projects that have not been following these sections, and there's been a lot of delay. And it's been now a handful of projects over the last couple of years. And so we ask that a question be inserted about that, as well as a question about human remains, because oftentimes those are part of landscapes, those are part of tribal cultural resources. So it makes sense, again, putting all these questions in one place and just dealing with all of these issues that are about the same types of resources, tribal cultural resources, at one time. Okay, I guess our last, I'll close up and just, our last request would be that we continue dialogue about the next iteration, the draft, any revisions that are made to this draft. We really appreciate the inclusion of tribes thus far. However, with the language that has been noticed for this rulemaking. We participated in, I think it was like one general public meeting and one webinar, and we all submitted comments, but we didn't have another interface with OPR before this package was put together and sent to Natural Resources. And we think if we would have been able to have another dialogue, another face-to-face, another sort of in exchange of maybe why the language was changed, what our comments meant, and why we were offering them, that this draft might have looked a little bit different than it does now. So we just we're asking that we continue this dialogue, and that if there are changes made, we'd be able to come back and have a discussion about that language, and to explain our written comments, because it's really difficult to just submit written comments, come up here and testify without sort of a back and forth discussion. I think it's wholly appropriate that this opportunity be given to tribes, because this law impacts tribes in a way that it does not impact other governmental agencies. And that's because these resources are so integral to a tribe's identity and tribal self-determination. And it's wholly appropriate to engage in consultation, in discussions with tribes, and actually work on, you know, maybe coming up with language that meets with the tribal goals that were set forth in AB 52, utilizing the tribe's expertise an understanding of how this process works on the ground every day in the protection of sacred places. It's not giving an advantage to tribes as a stakeholder. It's actually respecting the fact that this law impacts tribal governments in a very real way. And those types of impacts are taken into account through mandates at federal and state levels about two agencies that they are to engage with tribes when a regulation or a law is implemented that affects their tribal governments. And this is one of those laws that does. So we really ask for the engagement on this because we think we have really good information to share. And we offer all of these comments, you know, with the intention of making the rollout of this law easier and more streamlined, and to not result in confusion and litigation. So with that, I thank you for letting me go over.
Thank you for your comments. We really appreciate that.
And I appreciate it.
So do we have anybody else in the audience that wants to speak today? Nope. Okay, well, I want you to know, Ms. Miranda, and those listening on the phone and those in the audience, that Resources is committed to continued interaction with tribal governments. So if a tribe would like to consult on this version or a subsequent version, you're more than welcome to set that meeting with us up. So just let us know, and we'll work on meeting with your tribal leadership. And as far as this process goes, I'm going to close this hearing if there aren't further comments, and then folks are welcome to submit their comments by 5 for the administrative process or come see me afterwards. Thanks.